Call the meeting to order. It is December 18th, 2023. This is a regular assembly meeting. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Rob?
Here.
Mark?
Here.
Donna?
Here.
Bob?
Here.
Scott?
Here.
Jay?
Not on mute.
Excused.
Thomas?
Here.
Okay, it's now time for the voluntary Pledge of Allegiance.
Flag of the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, next thing on the agenda is approval of minutes, and that is from the December 4th meeting. I'd entertain a motion to approve those minutes.
Make a motion to approve the minutes from December 4, 2023.
Second.
Favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Aye. Okay, passes unanimously. Item 4, amendment and approval of the meeting agenda this evening. Are there any proposed amendments to this agenda? Seeing none, entertain a motion to approve the meeting of the agenda as presented.
So move.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay,
we'll move forward with the agenda as presented this evening. There are no public hearings this evening, no bid awards. That brings us to item 7, which is persons to be heard on items related to tonight's agenda. Please step to the microphone, state your name and who you represent. There's a 5-minute time limit.
Hi, my name is John Mergus. I'm the owner of Petersburg Marine, and I want to address Resolution 2033 on disposition of fire engine number 5. I wasn't planning to come here until an hour and a half ago when I listened to the news, so everything that I'm going to speak about is just what I heard on the local radio, and I may not be fully informed of all the different facets of this. But I am requesting that you reconsider your plan to dispose of the of that vehicle to an out-of-town location. I think it has extreme value. The news article said something about very low value, 30 years old, and I was a volunteer with the fire department in the early 2000s for about 10 years. Even back then, I was too old to fight fires, but I was an engineer, and Engine 5 is the one that I was mostly familiar with. So I am very, very familiar with that apparatus. And considering it's unknown how long the Scow Bay Fire Station will be there, and my interest is if it's available, I will offer the city, the borough, excuse me, $10,000 for that apparatus. I did bring my checkbook. I'll be happy to write the check right this evening. And it has tremendous value, would have tremendous value to me as something to keep in my boatyard for fire protection. When a boat catches on fire, there usually isn't much time to respond. The amount of time it would take, even if I was a volunteer, to go back to Scow Bay Fire Hall and get something rolling and getting up there, would be several, many minutes. Where if I had that apparatus right in the yard, and my employees would also be intimately familiar with it, it's something that we could use immediately. We do have a fire cart. It's very primitive. It's a 200-gallon portable cart that has a garden hose on it and a small Honda pump. It doesn't do much, but it's better than nothing. But to have that apparatus there would be of tremendous value. And it would be of great value to the commercial fleet who has a I have almost 100 boats in the yard, And often when there is a boat fire, within a very short period of time, that boat is usually totally gone, but there's boats next to it stacked right close by. And that would enable us to definitely abate that fire from moving before the professional volunteers came in and responded from downtown, or if they could respond also from Scow Bay, but it would save probably 30 minutes of response time. And so it just has so much value to the community. I think it would behoove the people, the residents, to have that here for us to use. I think I covered everything on that, but thanks for hearing me out.
Thanks for your input tonight, Mr. Mergers. Is there anyone else that would like to speak on items related to tonight's agenda? Seeing none, we'll move to item 8, persons to be heard on unrelated to the agenda, items unrelated to tonight's agenda. Seeing no interest, we'll move on to 9, boards, commissions, and committee reports. There's nothing there to this evening, no items under the consent agenda. That brings us to item 11, report of other officers. And Member Lynn will give us an update on SEPA activities.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just kind of short tonight here. Both Swan and Tai reservoirs are full going into the winter power generation season. That's great. That'll provide sufficient power for power generation, I think, through spring, and we shouldn't have any problems, at least with water supply. The board voted to hold wholesale power rate study for 2024. So there, from a wholesale power standpoint, there's no increase. There'll be no rate increase for 2024. There will probably need to be a quarter cent increase in 2025, but that's yet to be determined based on what the costs come out on some other projects that are ongoing. The board approved the 2024 operating budget. The big projects for 2024 are the beginning of the relicensing for both Swan and Tai reservoirs with Federal Energy Regulatory Agency, initiating the design and permit dialogue with FERC to approve the addition of a third turbine at Tai, and completing a study on grid stability. Last, I want to give credit to our SEPA CEO, who has been working diligently to maximize power production from our two hydro facilities across the Swan Tai inner tie, thereby reducing spill and maximizing returns. That also keeps our rates low. The result is a major contribution to us. We have the best wholesale, the lowest wholesale power rates in Alaska. Thank you. Unless there's any questions for folks.
Any questions of Assemblymember Lynn? Okay, thank you for your report. Okay, that brings us to item B under report of other officers, and Safety Committee Chairman Holmgren has provided a written report on the Safety Committee activity. So I'm taking it he's not going to be here. The Safety Committee met November 21st. Each committee member reported the status of their department's response to the APEI recommendations. 62 borough employees responded to a safety survey that the committee sent to all borough employees, and the results were discussed. No respondent to the survey asked for follow-up contact from the safety committee. The compilated results were shared with all department heads. The committee is working on updating sections of the borough safety manual, and the next meeting is Tuesday, December 19th, 2023 at 1 p.m. So that's tomorrow. See if I can get back without losing the agenda here. Not by now. Okay, mayor's report, I believe. Okay, now I found it. Was going to be a quick meeting. Huh. There we go. Okay, mayor's report. Pretty short mayor's report tonight. It's not new news, but Trident on December 12th mentioned the sale of four of their major plants in Alaska with downsizing some of their other plants. Petersburg is one of those plants. I thought there was a very good report that filled us, was very informative to me in the last week's paper. And Thursday, I received a phone call from Stephanie Moreland from Trident, who is the Executive Vice President for Communications and Public Affairs. And she assured me that she would keep in contact through me and probably other avenues in the borough or from other employees at Trident on what's taking place with this transaction. So it sounds like they don't want to leave anybody in the dark. So, and besides that, I'd like to, and there's the original report attached here when the news release. I'd like to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year from the Petersburg Borough, and have a good 2024. Manager's report.
Yes, sir. So our water staff performed some maintenance on the air relief valves recently, and the sedimentation basins at the treatment plants were cleaned. We also spent some time at Cabin Creek Reservoir to secure some loose logs that had floated into the protective log boom. Wastewater staff has been working on replacing a sludge pump in the digester room at the treatment plant. And our sincere condolences go out to Dennis Jones' family for the recent loss of Dennis Jones Sr. The Blind Slough Hydro Project is winding down. The construction contractor is working on punch list items, and the electrical subcontractor is working on finishing up final details. The Gilks team is monitoring the generator during the required reliability run. I think that's actually completed. And the Electric Power Systems is working with OS Engineering to fully integrate the hydro controls and monitoring into PowerMite's SCADA system. SCADA is the supervisory control and data. It's basically what our crew uses to basically monitor how the hydro operates and pieces of the equipment, and can look at it from here, including off a laptop, if they can take it home. Nope. Just from this. Okay. Well, we'll get there someday. How's that? Generator is working well with only a couple of minor issues to correct. So the project is very close to being done. Carl, do you want to add anything to? No?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
It's working well. That's really the story right now. We're doing well.
Good. So anyway, very good for everybody. Thank you, Petersburg, to all that attended the Jingle and Mingle winter event. Thank you to all the community donations to help make it a success. We look forward to celebrating the season with you again next year. Parks and Rec will be hosting the next dive-in movie, The Nightmare Before Christmas. Call or see the front desk for details or check out their Facebook page. Community Center will be closing at 1 p.m. on Saturday, the 23rd for the holidays, and reopening on Tuesday, December 26th for regular programming. Parks and Rec Youth Volleyball season is now open for registration. Register online or in person. And winter break, extra swim, and gym times will be happening. Check for flyers around the community center and on Facebook with details. We have a lifeguard course scheduled for January 19th through the 21st at the Aquatic Center. Contact Scott Burt for more information and to sign up. 6 hours of online coursework is required before attending the three-day class. And Parks and Rec is working with borough staff and an outside vendor to outline the sewer issues in the Aquatic Center locker room and to develop cost estimates on maintenance issues, including paint and the HVAC changes. We are in the process of filling our final open employee slots at assisted living. First time in over a year, we've been able to get full staff up there. So that's exciting for us. How's that? Christmas is going very well at the manor. We have decorations put up and have choirs, the children choir coming and singing to the residents. They really enjoy that. We've had no call-outs or reported infrastructure damage with the recent heavy rains. Hopefully that continues. And with the continuing warmer weather, the streets crew has been catching up on land orders and ditching projects. Snow removal equipment is ready for action when needed. We are having some overtime in the motor pool to keep up with business of the department. We're still missing a mechanic up there. Heck, it's been vacant since May, and even with the added wages, we have not yet had an applicant. So continues to be an issue. The motor pool is auctioning multiple surplus vehicles and equipment via sealed bids. Bid responses are due on December 21st. Details are available on the borough's Facebook page or by calling Public Works at 907-772-4430. Chris and his group have already started on the vehicle replacement inspections for FY25 budget year. And building maintenance continues to help us at Mountain View Manor with some deck repairs on the building. And that was it.
Okay, thank you for your report. Are there any questions of the manager on his report this evening? Member Marsh.
Thank you. Through the mayor, Mr. Giesbrecht, a couple of things. What are, and maybe Chris would be the one to address this, what are some of the criteria we're looking at for vehicle replacements?
Probably best if Chris answers that, but it's, I'll answer in general and let him add on. So we look at mileage and maintenance history. We're basically a, you know, maintenance shop. We can't do major work. We just don't have the staff for that. So, you know, when we start seeing higher maintenance costs on a vehicle, it's down more often than it's running, those kind of things. That goes into the, you know, thought process of, okay, is it time to retire a vehicle and replace it? It's also issues with functionality for that particular department. I mean, Carl's got a couple of big vehicles coming up in Power and Light, our bucket trucks, where the hydraulics start not being quite as steady as they should be. Those can lead to, you know, issues of safety and everything else. And also, it's really expensive here to get people to work on those. We have to bring in, you know, hydraulic mechanics from off the island. So, Chris, what did I miss?
That covered it fairly well. I think on the question of what criteria brings something in for a replacement inspection, I would add that it's triggered generally by a vehicle approaching the end of its anticipated lifespan. So when we buy something, we'll assign it a value. A light duty truck might be a 15-year projected life. And so unless something happens with that truck during that time period to speed up the replacement process, when it gets to that 15-year mark or is approaching that 15-year mark, we'll do a replacement inspection on it and just evaluate it to see, okay, is it, what kind of shape is it in? You know, can we keep it in service? And if so, you know, then we'll extend it out. And, you know, determining when to replace a vehicle is also different for the mission of the vehicle. You know, certain things like, you know, admin cars, those are not necessarily critical for life safety functions, so we're not going to be maybe as proactive with something like an admin vehicle as we are going to be with, you know, a plow truck or a power and light truck, something, or, you know, some sort of apparatus where, you know, response time is critical and life safety in and around the vehicle is critical during a, you know, a power outage or a snow event or something like that. So anyway, that's a couple of the other things that go into a replacement evaluation. Does that answer your question?
It does, thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions of the manager on his report tonight? Thank you, Manager Giesbrecht. And that brings us to unfinished business. There's only one item under unfinished business, 14A. That's ordinance 2023-15. This is an ordinance adjusting the fiscal year 2024 budget for known changes. It's the third and final reading. And this ordinance was approved unanimously in the first two readings. So I'd entertain a motion to approve this ordinance in its third reading.
So move.
Second.
Motion been made by Member Lynn, seconded by Member Fine Walsh. Any discussion? None. Will the clerk call the roll?
Mark?
Yes.
Excuse me. Donna?
Yes.
Thomas?
Yes.
Rob?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Scott?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, ordinance 2023-15 passes unanimously. That brings us to item 15 on tonight's agenda, new business. Item A is a resolution 2023-18. This is a resolution to vacate and convey a portion of the Ramona Street right-of-way between North Nordic Drive and Valkyrie Street and to authorize acquisition of lot 10A and a 20-foot utility easement. If adopted, this resolution will vacate a portion of the Ramona Street right-of-way and convey it to John and Miriam Swanson in exchange for lot 10A and a 20-foot utility easement to accommodate the pump station 4 replacement project. I'd entertain a motion to approve this resolution.
So move.
Second.
Motion made by Member Marsh, seconded by Member Lynn. Any discussion? And maybe just for the public listening, Carl, could you give an update on why this is important to this land exchange?
Sure can, Mr. Mayor. So this project to replace Pump Station 4 has been going for a while in development. And the property next to the pump station is a lot more desirable for the constructability of the project than using the right-of-way that is behind the pump station and next to the Swanson's home. The engineers determined fairly early along that if there was a way to build this pump station next to the existing as opposed to behind it, we would save a tremendous amount of money with bypass pumping during the construction itself, and also avoid some of the risk associated with digging a very deep hole next to the Swanson's house. So there are a couple really good reasons to focus on trying to put this pump station next to the existing instead of behind it. And so that those reasons pushed me to go down this road, and I'm hopeful that we'll see some support for this right-of-way vacation and establishing the easement across Swanson's property.
Okay, thank you for that explanation. Is there any other discussion? Member Marsh.
Thank you. So maybe in addition to this one, we have 3 other pump stations. Is that correct?
Through the mayor, we have 20 other pump stations.
20 other, okay. So where, because this one is, can you tell me how this one got to be the subject of this replacement project? If you would, please.
Sure. Basically, we started, the department started a process to look at our major pump stations a few years ago and start replacing them. All of them have been, were built in the early 70s and then refurbished in the 80s. It's been quite a while since we've got a major upgrades in any of these. Pump Station 4, the subject of this project, is the second largest pump station in our system. All of the wastewater from the community that is south of Hungry Point flows through this station. So it's very vital to get it on to the largest pump station and then on to the treatment plant. We replaced the largest pump station number 5, a few years ago. And so our focus settled on Pump Station 4, but not just because it was the next one in the line. It's because the pumps that we have in that station are no longer made. If we have an impeller, say, that we need to have replaced, we have to find somebody that will cast it from scratch. Basically, it's not a good situation to be in. At least one of the pumps in this pump station has an issue. We can't get the isolation valves closed to really repair it, and the control system is aging, and it's just really time to upgrade this pump station so that we have continued service. This is a critical enough location that we can't afford this not to work. There's nowhere for the water to go if this is not working. We can't pump it into the Narrows. And so this is a, it's a link in our collection system chain that, that has to be renewed. And after this one is complete, the next one that we really need to start working on is Pump Station 3, which is down by OBI. And after that, there'll be more. It's kind of a never-ending process to renew these pump stations and make sure they're doing what we need them to do.
Thanks for the clarification. Appreciate it.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, the clerk, please call the roll.
Donna?
Yes.
Rob?
Yes.
Scott?
Yes.
Thomas?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, resolution 2023-18 passes unanimously. That brings us to resolution 2023-19. This is a resolution to authorize the sale of the borough's 1991 Pierce Pumper fire engine, engine number 5, to the city of Hyder Volunteer Fire Department for $1 in an as-is, where-is condition. Approval of this resolution will authorize the sale of this engine, which has been decommissioned and removed from service in Petersburg, to the city of Hyder Volunteer Fire Department. I'd entertain a motion to approve this resolution.
So moved.
Second.
Motion's been made by Member Fine Walsh, seconded by Member Lynn. Discussion. Member Marsh.
Thank you. Yes, I guess I do have a question presented by Mr. Mergers. It begs the question, could this have been handled, well, brought before the public to say, hey, we're decommissioning engine number 5. Are there any parties who would be interested in it? And I guess it hadn't occurred to me. So I do appreciate him bringing this forward. And it actually makes good sense. I don't know what the cost of moving a vehicle that size and weight would be to Hyder. And I understand they are without one of any kind. But it does make sense that we would consider a local need first.
Member Lynn, did you have your...
Yep, I do. I concur. I think we need to take care of our needs locally before we send something out of town is basically where I come out. Thank you.
Schwartz.
Yeah, there have been, I have two boats out there, and so that's my selfish outlook on it, but we've already paid for it once, and if John's willing to buy it, it's a win-win as far as I can tell. Is, you know, and if I'd hate to see one of my boats catch fire from the heaters and then take out two more. So if they can do, we can do anything to alleviate that problem, that'd be, I think that would be good.
Any other discussion from the assembly members? I've recognized Aaron, but and I've had questions about replacing fire engines. I understand when they've reached a certain point in their life as far as usability for a volunteer fire department. I'll recognize you next, Jeff. And you know, with 5,000 miles and 400 hours or whatever it has on it, this engine number 5, maybe. It would have some usable life here in town. I don't know if the deal's already been made with Hyder. I guess definitely not. We're approving that in this resolution. So we should maybe think it over. Maybe there's better use for it locally since the time. Rankin.
Thank you. Some considerations with that. So one is, right now the borough pays and maintains not just for the operation of the pump itself and the engine, but all the fire hose is tested yearly to make sure that it's not going to blow apart when you put pressure behind it, as well as other things that involve the operation of flowing water. Traditionally, what has been done, why this was proposed, is Petersburg has a history of, when it decommissions a fire engine, they give it to another community that's of lesser resources. The last two iterations of that, that has been CAKE. They received, I believe, our last two engines, if I'm correct. Yeah. So that's where this proposal came from. So if it's not going to be in the borough's service, it could only be used in private hands, which means the private entity that is operating it assumes all liability for its response, all of it. And it cannot be a part of my operations, because you don't want to have a piece of unmaintained equipment or of unknown origin. You don't want to open yourself up to that. That's a huge liability. You can certainly choose to sell it to a private entity in town. It's your guys' decision, but it could not be part of my operations. It would have to only be part of the shipyard operation, for example, or any other entity that would be interested in buying it, which is kind of why I'd considered it an auction. Normally, if you're looking online at trucks down south and things like that, you can find them, you know, 1960s to 1990s for about $4,000 to $5,000 on average on a lot of sites. That's part of where the low value came in. And then also, in respect to the shipyard outright, there is a fire station directly across the street. And if Mr. Mergus and his employees and other concerned individuals wanted to respond to that station to help, with response, they could certainly join the Petersburg Volunteer Fire Department and train with us and just use our maintained equipment. So.
Thanks. Thanks, Mr. Hanks, for that input. I appreciate it. I agree completely. You know, I think these fire engines are fairly complex operations, if I understand correctly, and without, you know, pretty intensive maintenance, they may not even have much of a serviceable lifespan. I think maintaining the tradition of transferring these vehicles after they're no longer being used here to a community that needs them is not one that we should just throw aside, you know, in order to keep this. And I mean, we just got a new fire engine, and I have to believe, I have to agree with Aaron here. If we think our fire, you know, response is not sufficient, then that's something we should look into. And frankly, I mean, I think it's pretty good. I don't think we have any reason to worry, but you know, it seems like that's the outfit we should be relying on for fire suppression, not, you know, hand-me-down trucks. I believe that the truck would probably be better in the hands of the community of Hyder. They may be better able to maintain it, and it sounds like they need it. I mean, we just had a tremendous amount of trouble and expense getting the replacement engine here. So it's important to recognize how difficult that can be for some communities, and, it's an important item to have. So I support this. I think it's a great idea.
Any other discussion or input from assembly members? Member Newman.
I'd like to make a comment. Yeah, can everybody hear me okay?
Yeah.
I'm in support of showing it to Mr. Mergus. I know that there was a gilnetter that caught fire out there and was pretty much a total loss. I know that response time is everything when it comes to fires, and minutes count. And if he's on scene and can use the equipment, then that would potentially save other people's boats, if not the boat that actually caught on fire. I think I heard, correct me if I'm wrong, but Mr. Hankins proposed a concept of allowing Mr. Mergus to use the maintained equipment at Scale Bay. I don't think that is a prudent idea. I think if there's any liability, that would be it right there. But us selling the pumper to Mr. Mergus, we're absolved of any liability because we're selling it to a private party. Hopefully he would maintain it to, you know, the necessary standards to keep things safe. But we have an opportunity to keep our resource here local, and I support that.
Okay, thank you for your input. I just thought it was, you know, I'm not opposed to what we've done in the past. I think that's great. How about Cake and maybe even potentially Hyder? We'll see how this goes. But I think it's important to look at what the community needs are firsthand. And one question for Mr. Hankins, if this is a hypothetical. If we did sell this to a shipyard and there was a fire broke out on their property and they've started battling the fire, I would assume the fire department would still respond and help.
Yes, that is correct. Mr. Mergus, in particular, maintains his own private hydrant, and I believe there is another entity in town that is currently building a warehouse that would have their own private hydrant. That would be fine. The question is do you guys want a private fire truck, if he has to hook up to a different hydrant, to hook up to borough equipment? So that is something to consider. He could only, if you, that answer is no, there's only one hydrant that he would have access to on his property then. And the next closest hydrant is on the street, and you have to run roughly 1,100 feet of LDH just to get to the boat fire. At least the one that the Gillnet that was brought up earlier, that's where that one was. You have to run all the way down Olson Avenue, so.
Personally, I wouldn't, I don't think a private entity should be hooking up to the borough's fire system, hydrant system, or whatever. That wasn't, why I was asking that question. But so I guess since we've never had this, stumbling block or whatever you want to call it before, maybe we could vote this down. We could advertise it for sale, or I don't know what the right answer is. I feel bad since we've had negotiations with the city of Hyder already.
So it's not official. They know it's pending this agreement. So, but they had put in that they are interested when we started talking to other fire departments at the. Alaska State Fire Convention, that's what it is. One thing that you should consider, if you're going to sell it to a private entity and leave it on the island, there needs to be a set of rules attached to it, just like hooking up to borough equipment, that, what can they do and not do with that apparatus, because the potential for someone to get hurt if somebody does something improper is great. So, just a consideration.
Yeah, I wanted to ask Aaron a question, if I could. Were hoses and pumps and everything staying on the fire truck that were going to Hyder? I mean, something assembly has to deal with. I mean, is there stuff on the engine that would normally go to Hyder, but in this case, we'd want to leave on the truck?
The only thing left on the engine itself, I believe, is an old style axe that we've transitioned away from. And the current hose, which according to the fire marshal who helps, he works with the testing of that hose. This, a lot of it is aged out twice over. So it's two times past its service life. And his plan was to take it to the dump and throw it off so that Hyder couldn't even use it because it's that old.
Just wanted to make sure it was out the open as far as what came with the truck and what didn't.
So the hose for that particular engine is not usable according to the fire marshal anymore. Was
slated to be decommissioned. That's regulated by the NFPA, the National Fire Protection Association. They're also the ones that set service life for fire apparatus. Their recommendations, disobey them at your own risk, because you can open yourself up to liability. 20 years for a first due response apparatus is their recommendation, with no more than 25 years of a first due fire apparatus able to respond initially. You can go up to 30 years for a second due backup engine, and that's the recommendation. It's NFPA 1901, and you don't have to follow that, but if you don't and something happens, then there's a standard that has been set nationally that you've just disobeyed, and if someone took you to court over it, liability. Fire departments down south get away with it because they have mutual aid and other departments that can help cover, you know, their response. Whereas we are just the one entity with only the equipment we have, so.
Any other discussion? I guess the clerk will call the roll. Member Fine Walsh.
Well, I just want to, yeah, I just can't help but feel that, you know, I feel uncomfortable going against what I perceive as the, you know, kind of the desires of Mr. Hankins here. You know, I think that we should listen to what he's saying, and I understand, you know, the desire to sort of keep these resources local, but I think in the broader scheme of things, in terms of the overall value of the borough's you know, assets, vehicle assets, and our budget, this is quite small, you know, and I think it could make a really big difference for a community like Hyder. So something to consider.
Okay, any other input? We've got one, you know, the thought, I guess, if this resolution fails, what would be the next step for Engine 5? Would we put it on the list with these other vehicles?
I'd have to look at how the code reads, but I believe that would be the case. If there's no code issues related to this, and I don't think there are, we would just include it in a surplus vehicle auction. We'd have to have some kind of disclaimer that, you know, that Aaron talked about, that we say this is what it can and cannot be used for. We'd want to take all the identifying stuff off of it, so it's not a Petersburg fire truck, that kind of stuff. And then we'd put it up for sale to all bidders. And that's probably the right way to go, rather than just sell it to John. He's a reliable guy, clearly, but if we're going to sell it here on the island, we probably need to put it on the market and see who else is potentially interested.
That makes sense. There's no other discussion. Will the clerk call the roll?
Thomas?
Yes.
Scott?
No.
Bob?
No.
Rob?
No.
Donna?
No.
Mark?
No.
Thank you.
Okay, the resolution fails with a 5-1 vote with Member Fine Walsh in favor. That brings us to resolution item C, support for House Bill 2001, an act changing the residency requirements for hunting, trapping, and sports fishing privileges. Assemblymember Newman requested a letter of support for House Bill 201, sponsored by Representatives Hemshoot and Hanna from Juneau, which will align the residency requirements for hunting, trapping, and sports fishing privileges with the requirements to receive a permanent fund dividend. I'd entertain a motion to support this letter of support.
So move.
Is there a second?
Second.
A motion been made by Member Lynn, seconded by Member Marsh. Discussion.
I'd like to jump in here. Can I say something?
Member Newman.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. So I talked to enforcement about it to get some clarification on it. They, of course, they can't recommend one way or the other, or, you know, yay or nay on it. They can just kind of give me some background on the history of it. And so the history is to be a resident for, and this only applies to sport fishing, hunting, and trapping in Alaska. This is, there's no aspect of this that relates to commercial fishing. So this is just fishing, hunting, trapping for sport purposes. So to become a resident of Alaska, you have to be here for 12 months. You have to have a primary domicile, and you have to not be claiming any residency benefits in another state. But beyond that, once you've accomplished that, people can leave the state and still claim residency and come back and enjoy the benefits of being a resident of Alaska, even if they're gone for an undetermined amount of time. So it's my opinion this system, you know, the system's been abused. And so this bill has been introduced by Kurt Whitehead. It was his concept, and then presented it to Rebecca Hemshoot on the House side of the state House. And so she's been advocating for it. And essentially what it's going to do is align the residency requirements with those stipulated by the Alaska Permanent Fund Dividend Program. So you're a resident after 12 months. And the one difference between, and I spoke incorrectly earlier today on the radio, because the PF, the dividend program, states residency is acquired after a 12-month period, but it's January through December, whereas this will be 12 months from the time that you arrive in Alaska. So that is the one thing that's similar with the way it is currently written. So somebody didn't end up waiting like a year and a half to become a resident. But what it does is you can't be gone for more than 180 days unless it's for valid reasons like school or medical or military. And so what it does is it gives some accountability to people's, you know, claims of residency, and then it allows the state troopers enforcement to be able to have some kind of teeth and be able to handle the situation if people are taking advantage of the way it's written now. So I feel like it's protecting and conserving fish and wildlife resources that are getting harder to get. And if people are gonna claim residency, then they need to be residents. And if not, they need to pay non-resident fees, which go towards management. So that's my take on it.
Okay, thank you for your input. Any other discussion on this letter of support? Member Marsh?
I'm all for small government. So whereas in concept, this makes sense that those who don't live here don't get the resident privileges for living here. So I wonder if this is going to create a whole new level of bureaucracy, a whole new department, the enforcement, you know, who's going to police. You know, well, Mr. Jones has been here, you know, has gone 181 days, and, well, you know, Mrs. Davis has been here for 179 days, that kind of thing. I'm a little bit reluctant, like I say. In concept, it does make sense, but how it will increase government, I have a hard time on that one.
I have an answer for that. Okay, so what this does is it gives the enforcement, the troopers, the ability to ask the questions of how long have you been gone? And now, because if this gets passed, then they'll be able to look up airline ticket receipts or ferry ticket receipts or how people got here. Because right now they can't ask those questions because there's no teeth to the regulation. It's just you're a resident after 12 months, and beyond that, you can be gone as long as you want, and they can't ask those questions. So what this does is it gives a tool in the toolbox for enforcement to enforce it so that they will have that capability to ask those questions legally.
Okay, it seems to me like, you know, the letter of support wouldn't hurt in this case. And if they tie it to the requirements to receive a PFD, permanent fund dividend check, it might be easy access for the enforcement to decide if you're legitimately a citizen or not. So I support sending a letter. Any other discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Bob?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Scott?
Scott?
Yes.
Thank you. Donna?
Yes.
Rob?
Yes.
Thomas?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, Okay, we will be sending a letter of support for House Bill 201. Item D, work session with Mental Health Trust Land Office. The Land Office Senior Project Manager Chandler Long and State of Alaska Planning Officer Amy Orange Posma, hopefully I pronounced that right, request a work session with the Assembly to discuss planning, and working together in the best interest of Petersburg. They plan to travel to Petersburg for this work session and request the Assembly choose a date and time between January 16th and 25th, other than the 18th, because the Assembly Chambers is busy on that day. So January 16th is on a Tuesday, which will be an Assembly meeting.
You're right, it is an Assembly meeting.
Okay, so 16th and 18th are off the books. And then we have until the 8th, have until the 25th, which is a Thursday. What is the preference of the Assembly? January 22nd, Monday? Or would you rather have it on a weekend, towards the weekend, later in the week?
Monday's fine.
Monday's good.
Okay, how about Monday, January 22nd? Member Schwartz, are we being down for that? You said you're going to be doing some traveling? Okay.
Yeah, I'll be traveling, but can I zoom in on that one?
Sure.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we'll take a vote to send a response to these people who want to have the work session for January 22nd, 6 p.m.
Can we have a motion and a second first, and then we'll vote?
Need a motion to have a meeting with the land office and other people coming on January 22nd at 6 p.m.?
So move.
Second.
Okay, I've been straightened out once again. Okay, we've already discussed it. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, so this will be an interesting meeting.
Aye.
I'm glad we put this together to... Okay, next item, Entrance Island Dock. The Assembly is asked to decide whether the borough would accept ownership and future maintenance of the Entrance Island Dock from the State of Alaska if it was fully restored. So since you have to make a motion in the positive, I'd entertain a motion to take ownership of the dock if it was rebuilt by the State of Alaska.
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Okay, then motion made by Member Fine Walsh, I believe, seconded by Member Marsh. And when I brought this discussion up in response to Mr. Orr from the Territorial Sportsman Organization in Juneau, it wasn't my intent for the borough to take ownership of the Entrance Island Dock and or to put it in any fashion in our priority list for funding. But if another entity like Juneau Borough through this Territorial Sportsman operation and the Messerschmitts family in Juneau, who approached me about it, just happened to run into them in Warm Springs Bay. If they could get the money, if the state would build it and they would take ownership, I would be fine with it. That's what, and it doesn't sound like that is where this could possibly lead. So, Mr. Giesbrook, can you explain the communications you've had on this issue?
I can. So, I've spoken to Mr. Orr, and that's what drove this. Talked to DOT and looked at our charter. This actually gives us, the way DOT looks at it is the only people they will give that to is the Petersburg borough because it's in our borough. And our charter even says that. You may remember we had to change the charter to allow Kuprinoff. That it's just that. Any harbor and port infrastructure has to be, we have to change the charter again. But despite that being an issue, DOT would not give it to anybody other than us. So I called Juneau, but didn't follow up on it once I got that information back from DOT, was that they won't give it to anybody but the borough. They'd be happy to give it to us, by the way, if that makes...
Yeah, if you need another year, you'll be pulling it off the bottom.
Yeah.
It was never my intent to, you know, I mean, it was the Assembly's decision in the past to, you know, not accept the Entrance Island if you had a choice. So I guess we did our best. We talked about it. So,
if I may, sir, that doesn't stop. I should have said this earlier, and I apologize. It doesn't stop him from getting money together and doing repairs to it. He'd have to work that out with DOT, but that can still happen. DOT, as silly as it sounds, doesn't have any issue with anybody else fixing it. They're just not going to, likely. And that has no impact on the borough's ownership or anything else.
Even if it stays in the ownership of the state of Alaska?
Yes.
They don't care if anybody goes up and puts planks on it?
He'd have to work it out with them from a standpoint of if they require engineering or anything like that. But truth of it is, they don't really care if somebody fixes it. And that, which is what I would tell Mr. Orr.
Member Feinwalsh?
I took a second to take a look at our old waterfront master plan, and it actually mentions Entrance Island. As I understood, if there was a way to finance the acquisition, and more importantly, a mechanism to pay for the continued maintenance, I don't necessarily think it would be a bad thing for our community potentially. But I wonder if there's some option whereby we acquire that from the state, but then turn around and lease it to this individual that's interested. So kind of alleviating the need for the borough to pay for the hard infrastructure and maybe also the maintenance of it, and then also give this person an opportunity to operate whatever type of dock they want, that occurred to me. It might be something worth mentioning to these people. I mean, I don't want the borough to take on, a maintenance cost that's unnecessary or unwanted. But I also think that the Entrance Island Dock, I hate to see a piece of state infrastructure like this fall apart or go to waste or remain unused or unusable, especially when somebody is actually interested in using it. So my two cents there.
Through the mayor, that could potentially happen, yes. I don't know that there's any restriction by the state to the borough leasing things out, but we'd have to own it first.
Well, at this point, if it's still the position of the assembly to not take ownership, even if the state gets it up to new standards or new condition, I guess would be a better word, doesn't mean we can't approach this again in the future if Mr. Orr and his group and Juno find a way to maintain it. It is a handy dock, but it's just a little bit far away. So, clerk, call the roll.
Scott?
No.
Bob?
No.
No.
Mark?
No.
Rob?
No.
Thomas?
No.
Donna?
No.
Thank you.
Okay, at this time, we don't want to own Entrance Island Dock, even if it's new. Item 16, communications. They're listed on our website or on tonight's agenda. We make a habit of not reading them. Next item on the agenda is item 17, assembly discussion items. There are no items listed. Do any assembly members have comments this evening besides ho, ho, ho? Seeing none, that brings us to recognitions. Are there any recognitions by assembly members or staff in the room this evening? Seeing none, entertain a motion to adjourn. Oh, Member Hankins.
I got
Mr. Hankins.
Sorry. Yeah. I have four of my volunteers completed their EMT-2 certification. Lieutenants Patrick Lane, Lieutenant Sarah Wright, Captain Morgan Falter, and Jesse Agner. So congratulations to them, and thank you for your dedication.
Thank you for the effort. Okay, now I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.